Good afternoon, wine lovers. Today we're heading from Dry Creek Valley in Sonoma County to St. Helena in Napa Valley by phone. So another informative trip is about to begin on the wine road.
He said, "Dave, you've created quite a stir up there, and we're going to turn you down." And in retrospect, I'm so glad my neighbors protested me, because this is the prime location in Dry Creek Valley.
Just realized that everybody was kind of getting to that point of realization that life would eventually get back to some form of normalcy, that putting a smile on people's face combined up with some wine drinking might be the solution to a multitude of problems.
He's winemaker Grant Long Jr. of A&R and Reverie Wines in Napa Valley. He was brought to my attention this week because of his response to COVID challenges, and it's a whimsical look at a problem most of us were experiencing. And his thoughtful, even sustainable business mindset is highly respectable. So there are two good reasons to have Grant Long on my show today. He's coming up later in the hour. My first guest is David Stair, the founder of Dry Creek Vineyard. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for tuning in. On the Wine Road is sponsored by Sonoma Clean Power, sourcing cleaner electricity and delivering programs that fit your lifestyle. Sonoma Clean Power, innovation grown locally. By On Fire Fireplaces and Outdoor Kitchen Showroom, a specialty store that focuses on beautiful fireplaces and outdoor living spaces for homes and businesses. They are open by appointment on Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa. And by Smothers European Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa, family-owned businesses since 1982 on the Corbiato Row, and their showrooms are open. You may recall hearing that last year, with the support of the Friends of Sonoma County Wine Library, I started recording oral histories again. It's an important project that preserves the history of those who contributed to the world-class reputation of the Sonoma County wine industry. We tape these interviews on video now, so these visual oral histories sound a bit different than my usual interviews. So today you'll hear my visual oral history with David Stair of Dry Creek Vineyard. They're just 2 years away from celebrating their 50th anniversary. David is a pioneer in the fact that his winery was just the second to open in Sonoma County following Prohibition. The first winery opened and folded decades ago. Dry Creek Vineyard was founded in 1972, and prior to that, David worked in the railroad business.
I got a bachelor's degree from MIT in civil engineering, and then got an MBA from Northwestern University, majoring in transportation marketing. And my first love in life has always been railroads. And so I had summer jobs with the Pennsylvania Railroad back east. And after graduate school, I went to work for the B&O for about 4 years. Not as a train engineer, but as an industrial engineer.
Right. And did you do some marketing as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. You took some trips to the Loire Valley in France, and there was something about the Sancerre or the Puy-Fumé that really grabbed your attention and inspired you to get into the wine industry.
In the summer of 1970, my wife and I spent 2 weeks in France in Burgundy and Bordeaux and the Loire Valley, and I came up with a scatterbrained idea that what I really wanted to do for the rest of my life was somehow move back to France and get into the wine business. Well, fortunately for me and for France, an article appeared in the Wall Street Journal just after that trip talking about what a great future California had for becoming a premium grape-growing and wine-producing area. And as a result of that article, I forgot about France and turned my eyes towards California.
But there was something about that Sauvignon Blanc that really captured you, huh?
Yeah. It's always been one of my favorite wines, yeah.
And you had the confidence to know that you could move to California and start your own wine?
Well, it was probably the nuts. That was crazy.
So you did move to California. The first place you went was, appropriately, UC Davis.
Yeah, I moved out here. It's funny. In March of 1971, I took a 3 or 4 day course at Davis on the wine business and realized that what I needed to do was go back to school full time and learn something more about it. So my family and I moved out here in August of 71. Kim was about six. My daughter Kim was about six or seven.
And you fully retired from B&O?
Yeah, I retired.
Or left?
Yeah. And my younger daughter was about 9 months old. And we came out, and I spent a year at UC Davis as a special graduate student studying enology and viticulture.
Great.
And while at Davis, spent most of my free time over here in Sonoma, a little bit in Napa and Mendocino, and the other traditional wine-growing areas of Northern California. But pretty soon in this wandering around the wine country, it became evident that what I wanted to do would be best done in northern Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. because Northern Sonoma County had a history of grape growing going back well over 100 years, and was pretty much an undiscovered area at the time. There were very few wineries trying to produce premium and quality wines here, and it just seemed like this is the place to locate.
So in 1972, you broke ground here on this spot.
Yes.
And there's a moment in time captured on your website in the photo with Kim with shovel in hand.
Yeah.
Throwing some dirt. And you're standing there with either a glass of wine or a glass of champagne.
I'm not sure what it was. I don't recall. We basically broke ground. Let me back up. In 1972, I bought this property based in April of 72. I bought about 70 acres here in Dry Creek Valley and wanted to build the winery up at my house. And unfortunately, the neighbors got up in arms about having a winery built on West Dry Creek Road.
That was my next question.
The opposition was led by Jerry Lambert, who ultimately started Lambert Bridge Winery. But he went around and got a couple hundred signatures from the neighbors. I went around and got a couple hundred signatures from the neighbors. And I think probably people will sign both petitions. The Board of Zoning Adjustments approved our use permit 5-0 in their hearing. And then my neighbors appealed it to the Board of Supervisors. And about 2 days before the hearing before the board, I got a call from Hank Spomer, who used to be our supervisor from the 4th District here, which is where Dry Creek Valley is located. And Hank said, "Dave, you've caused quite a ruckus in Dry Creek Valley. Can you come in and see me?" So I drove down to Santa Rosa and I saw him and he said, "Dave, you know, you've created quite a stir up there and we're going to turn you down.
Wow.
We're going to reverse the BZA's ruling." But he said, "You do own the property at the corner of Lambert Bridge and Dry Creek Road." "Yes, sir, I do." He said, "Well, we're going to make you put the winery there. And believe me, that's a lot better place to build a winery than West Dry Creek Road." And in retrospect, I'm so glad my neighbors protested me, because this is the prime location in Dry Creek Valley.
Right.
And it would have been much more difficult over on West Dry Creek Road.
So it's an interesting turn of events. And another reason you were a pioneer, because you were the first one to plant Sauvignon Blanc in this area, even though some vineyard specialists said that probably wouldn't be a good
idea. After I had bought this property, sometime in the spring or summer of 72, I don't exactly recall when, I got Bob Sessions, who used to be the Sonoma County Farm Advisor dealing in grapes, Dale Good, who used to be probably one of the leading viticulturists in the area, and a backhoe out here, and we dug some holes across the creek in what's known as DCV3. And Bob and I jumped down in the hole, and they looked around, "Yep, looks like pretty good vineyard dirt. It'll be a good vineyard." I said, "What varieties would you recommend growing here?" They said Napa Gamay and Chardonnay. And I said, "What about Sauvignon Blanc?" And they both said, "No, it's a bad variety. You don't want to grow Sauvignon Blanc here." As it turned out, it's by far, I think, the best white variety from Dry Creek Valley.
Right, yeah. Another first you had was the first winery to open since Prohibition. And that was a 39-year span, which indicates the impact that Prohibition had on the wine industry.
I used to think we were the first new winery in northern Sonoma County since Prohibition. And about a month ago, I was at a meeting of the Dry Creek Valley Association, and one of my former neighbors, I now live in Santa Rosa, came up to me and said, "Dave, you know, my husband and I started a winery in the late 30s. It went out of business 30 years ago, but we were the first new winery." Then I said, "Well, we're the first winery since Prohibition that still is in business."
Right. Okay. Then we'll go ahead and leave that in.
Okay, yeah.
We'll have to cut that out. Why did you choose to call the Sauvignon Blanc Fumé Blanc?
Well, I remember having a lunch with Barney Fetzer, who started Fetzer Winery back in the late 60s, sometime in 72 or 3, and we were chatting, and I said, "Barney, why do you call your Sauvignon Blanc Fumé Blanc and not Sauvignon Blanc?" And he said, "Because it sells." And he told me a story that one day they were bottling Sauvignon Blanc, and what was bottled before lunch was labeled Fumé Blanc. What was bottled after lunch was labeled Sauvignon Blanc, same wine. And he said the Fumé Blanc outsold the Sauvignon Blanc 3-1 on the shelf.
Wow.
So I figured, well, hey, I'm in the wine sales business, so let's call it Fumé Blanc.
Huh. Was Sauvignon Blanc just not that familiar with
it? It was, well, Robert Mondavi came up with the name Sauvignon Blanc, or Fumé Blanc in 1968.
Right.
And his Fumé Blanc took off like a wildfire. And it, at that time, all the top-selling Sauvignon Blancs were labeled Fumé Blanc. Our own, I think, Beringer, Chateau Saint-Jean, Mondavi. I think now the trend is more back towards Sauvignon Blanc than Fumé Blanc.
But sure. You don't really see too much Fumé Blanc, but you're still using it.
Yes,
though,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's still our best-selling wine.
I wonder if it's just a confusion with Cabernet Sauvignon and they just weren't getting the Sauvignon
Blanc. Well, I think, you know, traditionally, we've never really barrel-aged our Sauvignon Blanc. It basically stays in stainless steel and bottled right after fermentation, usually by February or March following harvest, and sees no oak whatsoever. The Australians call a oak-aged Sauvignon Blanc Fumé Blanc. But ours is not oak-aged, and I'm not sure what the other wineries do now.
If I'm not mistaken, fumé means like smoke.
It means basically white smoke. It's French words for white smoke.
So it kind of makes sense. A barrel does give it that kind of a smoky, oaky flavor to it. So, what other varieties were you growing at that time?
Our initial vineyards were planted to Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, and Cabernet.
David told me they ended up pulling out that Chenin Blanc in favor of more Sauvignon Blanc. However, they continue to make Chenin Blanc with grapes from the Clarksburg area, south of Sacramento. You're listening to My Oral History with David Stair of Dry Creek Vineyard. I'll continue with David next when On the Wine Road returns. You're listening to On the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis, and today I'm featuring my visual oral history with David Stair. This was taped on video last year as part of the Visual Oral History Project created by the Friends of Sonoma County Wine Library. Now, here's more of my conversation with Dave Stair of Dry Creek Vineyard.
I remember seeing a label of 1982, I think it was, of your Dry Creek Vineyard Reserve, and your name is prominent on top of the label, David S. Stair. Estate-grown Dry Creek Reserve.
Yeah.
So you didn't stick with that too long.
Well,
did you?
You know, back in the early 80s, I think it was, the BATF came up with the ruling or was considering a ruling that if you had a brand name Dry Creek Valley or Dry Creek Vineyard or Alexander Valley or Sonoma Vineyards, all of the grapes in that bottling had to come from the appellation implied in the name.
Right.
And that's why we came up with the name David S. Stair, because for a while we thought we might have to drop the term Dry Creek Vineyard and rename the winery. So we started, I think our first reserve wines were bottled under the David Stair label. And I think we made a Chardonnay, a red, and I think Sauvignon Blanc.
The one I saw was a Merlot Cab blend.
It's interesting, about a month ago I was at a tasting there's a group called the Old Timers in the wine business, and about every 3 months we get together and have lunch and talk about the good old times.
Yeah.
And one of the other people at this luncheon about a month ago brought a bottle of David S. Stair Reserve Merlot from 1983, and I must admit it was a wonderful wine. And he raved about it, and people who tasted it thought it was wonderful.
Great.
It was a 30 plus year old California Merlot.
Nice job. And you made that one?
It was made here, yeah.
You yourself?
I was the winemaker for the first couple of years, and then as we began to grow, it became evident that I couldn't do everything. For the first couple of years, I did everything. Our first winemaker was a fellow, John Jaffrey, and John worked for me, I think, from 1976 through 81. And then we hired a fellow, Larry Levine. And Larry worked for us from 81, I think, through 98. He was here for about 16 or 17 years. And did a wonderful job, but that wine was probably made by Larry. It was in 83.
And if I'm not mistaken, that period was when the sailboat appeared on the label for the first time, and it's been there ever since.
Our earlier marketing team I helped a friend of mine, a fellow by the name of Dave Reddy. We started a company called Winery Associates, which did the wine marketing and sales for Dry Creek, Preston, Alexander Valley Vineyards, Pedruntelli, and William Wheeler Winery. Dave began to perceive that we needed a a
some sort of symbol,
different label than the standard. The original label was kind of a pen and ink drawing of the wine, the original winery building. And we played around in the early to mid 80s with half a dozen different labels and didn't like any of them. Then someone said, I think maybe Dave or maybe my daughter Kim said, you know, you've always been interested in sailing. Let's try something with a sailing theme. So I gave this artist we had a couple of dozen issues of various sailing magazines, and he came back about a month later with four or five mock-up labels featuring sailboats, and I said, hey, that's what we want. So we moved to the sailing theme, I'd say, in the mid-80s.
And you had been a fan of sailing for
I started sailing when I was about 9 years old back in New England.
I did find it kind of humorous that you have a sailboat with
in a dry creek.
Dry creek valley. A dry creek
valley.
And then Kim, I understand, was her expertise continued that.
Kim went to school, went to college at San Francisco State with a degree in home economics, majoring in fashion design. And then she worked for 3 or 4 years in the fashion industry and then realized if she wanted to be a success, she'd have to move to LA or New York City, which she didn't want to do. So ultimately she came to work for us as initially as our San Francisco sales rep and worked for a couple of years doing that. And then gradually became kind of our director of marketing.
She ended up becoming the vice president, and this is now president of Dry Creek Vineyard. And she, along with her husband, Don Wallace, have made quite an impact here, and I'm sure you're quite thrilled about that.
Kim has done a wonderful job, I think,
Getting back to the sailing theme, you and your winery have really ingrained yourself into the sailing world and even doing some philanthropic endeavors.
Yes, you know, sailing has been a passion of mine since I was about 9 or 10 years old. And, you know, for 30 years I owned a 37-foot sailboat in San Francisco Bay, and I sold it about 15 years ago. And I'm originally from New England, and we bought a small cottage on the coast of Maine about 10 years ago. And now I have a 15-foot sailboat back there, which suffices my sailing fix of the year.
Right. You even have a tab on your website, Wine for Sailors.
Yes.
Yeah. So you make particular brand for them, or do you just
help them with their...
And you partner, though, with certain races.
Yeah,
and
we've done some work with America's Cup folks. And the year 2000, Kim and I went to New Zealand and did a wine tasting there. At the America's Cup Village.
Nice.
Yeah.
You must love combining the two
passions. Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun, yes.
Speaking of positive endeavors, you have been sustainably farmed for quite a while now, and Sonoma County has proposed the idea of being 100% sustainable, and that came about in 2014. By this year, 2019, and we're very close at 97%, but you are sustainable here, and you follow that principle quite well. And Don Wallace helps you with that?
Yes. Yeah, that's one of his main interests.
Congratulations on your support of those endeavors.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Another incredible project you spearheaded is Vineyards to Villages, which you and I have talked about in the past, and in association with Global Partners for Development, you help bring clean water project initiatives to West Kenya, and that has been an incredible challenge and great success for you, too.
I got involved with Global Partners about 12 years ago. They're a Sonoma County-based organization, which basically does development projects in Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda, traditionally the three traditional East African countries. And 4 or 5 years ago, we were trying to figure out how to involve the wine business, and came up with this idea that, you know, in order to make good wine and grow good grapes, you got to have a reliable source of good water and clean water. And in order to grow good people, you got to have the same kind of thing, a good source of water. And so many villages in rural East Africa have no reliable source of clean water. Quite often, women and oftentimes children, one of their main duties is to walk a mile or two or three to fetch water for their family in a 5-gallon bucket, bring it back, and that's their supply of water for the day. And out of that, they cook and they wash, and oftentimes the water comes from polluted sources. I've been to Africa several times and hope to go again fairly soon. And one of my most vivid memories on one of my trips to Africa was seeing, we were in Western Kenya near the town of Kisumu, where we have some projects. And incidentally, President Obama's father is from this area of Kenya.
Oh, yeah.
But we were visiting one of our projects, looking at a water well that we'd done a couple of years ago and talking with the villagers about it. And along comes walking down this path an African lady dressed in a very fancy kind of shawl, carrying a bucket of water in her head, talking on her cell phone. such a contradiction of the old
right.
and the new.
But they still didn't really have a great resource for water until you guys came
yeah,
along.
Yeah, and you know, one of the problems with, if you have to go a mile or two to get water, it takes a significant part of the day, and oftentimes children, that's part of the children's jobs, it prevents them from going to school.
Right.
And by coming up with a better source of water close to home, we first of all eliminate a lot of waterborne diseases because they're drinking good water, and it frees up more time for the kids to go to school. So Global Partners' two main efforts are kind of clean water projects, which we call WASH, water and sanitation hygiene, and education, building schools and encouraging particularly young African women to stay in school and finish high school and go on to college. And my wife and I have personally sponsored three kids over the last few years. Two of them are now teachers. One of them wants to become a lawyer eventually. And
yeah, I remember you telling me that a couple of years ago. That's great. And there's a photo on the Global Partners website of you surrounded by all these children from this community. That must just been an incredible feeling.
It is. It was very enjoyable, very rewarding.
So each year, proceeds from the Vineyard to Villages wine event helps out with this project. And so a number of wineries, quite a few wineries.
We have about maybe 15 or so that are actively involved. Gallo is quite heavily involved. Corbell supports us and a lot of smaller wineries. We raise about $100,000 a year, I think, through Vintage to Villages.
Yeah,
and our goal is to, there's this one county in Western Kenya that 21 schools do not have a clean water source. And our goal is to try to come up with funds to enable each of these schools to have a clean water source. And then it provides a clean water source for the village that surrounds the school.
Well, I'm thrilled to have the chance to get to learn more about you, and you've had some major accomplishments, and you must be proud of that. And it's been fun to sit here and talk.
You know, I'm very proud. I think I'm very proud of my daughter Kim. Mm-hmm. She's done a wonderful job over the last few years,
and she wants to keep it in the family.
Yes,
I understand. And they have kids now as well.
They have two kids. My daughter, my granddaughter Taylor, I think is 25 or 6, and my grandson Spencer is 21, be 22 this coming August. And so far, neither of them have shown any interest in the wine business. Taylor's into internet marketing, which I suppose you could integrate into the business.
Sure.
But Spencer is a junior at Montana State, majoring in fishing.
Well, maybe he'll get into sailboating, and then that'll bring him back to Dry Creek Vineyard.
Maybe so.
Well, David, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again for your time.
You bet.
David Stair of Dry Creek Vineyard from the Friends of Sonoma County Wine Library's Visual Oral Histories. To see the many wines they bottle at a variety of price points, visit drycreekvineyard.com. Once libraries open, you'll be able to find the Sonoma County Wine Library's Visual Oral Histories in the Healdsburg Regional Library on Piper Street. Up next, a serious winemaker decides to put a smile on our faces and lower-priced wines in our mouths to entertain us during this era of COVID. Grant Long Jr. of Napa Valley joins me on the Wine Road coming up. We're back on the Wine Road. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Now let's turn to a unique and lighthearted way of dealing with this COVID-19 era. Grant Long Jr. is a winemaker for A&R and Reverie Wines. They're highly acclaimed small production wines out of Napa Valley. But he recently got inspired to create another brand. Grant, I haven't said anything about what you have recently released. It is certainly a swift response to these, what I like to call, sobering times. Tell us what inspired your new brand and what it is exactly.
Well, like so many people, this is definitely a brave new world. And being a small winery owner and faced with wineries being closed and a full staff that we wanted to keep employed, we had to kind of come up with creative ways to pivot in an industry that has become kind of an old shoe for us. And just realized that as everybody was kind of getting to that point of realization that life would eventually get back to some form of normalcy, that putting a smile on people's face combined up with some wine drinking might be the solution to multitude of problems.
And the, right.
The TP Reserve wine brand was born, both out of kind of necessity on our end as a small winery, but also out of the ability to bring a product to a place in the market that fits what everybody's looking for.
So yeah, so you call it TP Reserve, and on the label is?
Toilet paper roll. I know it sounds like a strange thing to put on front of a bottle of wine, but combining up the fact that there has been a bit of Americana symbolism created during this time, as toilet paper has been one of the things associated with the COVID or pandemic or I guess quarantine life that we now are living. I just started to notice that much of the lighthearted nature of called levity to things seems to be associated around toilet paper. And I felt like it was a great way for us to be able to create a brand that could help our wineries, but also be part of a time, you know, a wine for the moment.
Yeah, and provide them something that they seem to be very passionate about these past few months.
Yes.
You know, I want to ask you about something, what I think is the second most impressive thing that you did. When you came up with this idea, how soon did you get the name approved, get the bottle labeled, and released to the market?
You know, you would be surprised. The words toilet paper and wine don't actually go together very often out there. So being able to come up with a website and branding and everything didn't have the typical barriers of entry that you'd expect. And having such a loyal set of followers through our other wineries, getting the wines out throughout the country to some of our supporters was actually not difficult either. So the whole thing kind of came to fruition over a couple months.
Yeah, that's pretty quick, doing a whole new brand. And as you mentioned, you also created a website around it.
Yeah, I mean, what we realized was, you know, with our other wineries, A&R and Reverie, you know, we're such a focal point are built around the wineries that we know during this time that most people are on their phones, most people are on their social media and website-based purchasing, that we would have to put together a plan and presentation for the wines that was a little different than our usual. And with the help of some really talented people, we were able to bring together what I think is it's a great presentation for a great product. But also something that people can bring, you know, again, a smile. I guess that's the closest thing I keep getting back to.
Yeah.
The ability to gift it, get a smile out of it while still drinking a great bottle of wine.
You mentioned the presentation. Yeah. So when Julianne, your PR gal, reached out to me, you know, I found it whimsical looking at the website and the bottles. And honestly, I wasn't sure if I was going to promote it. But then I watched the video on your website that you and your team created, and it's less than a minute, but the effort that went into setting up the scene and the story that accompanied it is what convinced me to talk with you and promote your TP Reserve. Nicely done.
Thank you. Yes, the being one of the younger winery owners in the Valley, we've gone through different iterations of I would call marketing or picture taking, and you always seem to find that that very classic shot of a winemaker walking down a row of vines and looking off into the distance like they can see the future. And I myself have found myself in that same picture and just decided that the comedy behind trying to bring a smile to everybody's face with the TP brand was to bring some of that real Napa Valley feel with a little bit of levity, I said, a little bit of comedy too.
Yeah.
So, yes, having the toilet paper rolls hanging from the vines, going down these mountain rows was a fun endeavor.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was going to mention exactly what it is, and we'll just kind of leave it at that. But it's something my listeners might want to look for and view. I'll probably have it on my Facebook page and certainly on my website as well, coming soon. So
very nice.
I almost see TP Reserve as not being so much a wine to buy and drink for yourself, although I'm sure it's very enjoyable, but more as a wine to give to a friend of yours who you know was a TP hoarder, as a way of saying, here, since you were so anxious to put yourself before others, maybe you'll want this too.
Yeah, the brand itself, I mean, obviously coming from our backgrounds here in Napa Valley, we weren't going to put anything in a bottle that we couldn't be proud of and to be back behind. But having the access to some of the fruit sourcing that we had and some of the higher yields from the vintage, we were able to put something together that I think combines both a value, a great product.
Yeah, you sourced from some top vineyards in Napa and El Dorado foothills regions for these wines.
Yeah, we've had a really great background in these particular growing regions with both Reverie and Annaire, and so being able to have access to some of it allowed for us to be able to be a little bit more quick or turnkey and being able to create them and bring them to fruition as fast as we did. You know, we have the most amazing team at our wineries that helped both in the cellar as well as on the creative side to help bring these wines literally to fruition overnight. And being able to have my staff employed and being able to have them doing things that bring a little bit of normalcy back to their lives was an important motivator behind this brand as a company.
Yeah, I want to get into more detail on that topic in the next segment. But so your website is tpreservewine.com, and I understand it'll be in retail locations as well?
Yes. I mean, at this point right now, we're trying to find locations where people would find, you know, a sense of humor involved in this. And obviously, the response that we've gotten from those that have tasted the wine and had the wine has been really, really positive. So now it's just a matter of finding the right places for it to exist over the next couple year or so.
I need to mention, too, that partial proceeds from the sale of the TP Reserve wines will be donated to Napa Valley Food Bank. So nice move, Grant.
Thanks. You know, at these times, obviously, food is one of those things that people often forget about. But even at our own dinner table, we will have our kids talk about what the things they're thankful for. And my son constantly always looks down at the plate and says, you know, I'm just really thankful for the food we have. And it's a constant reminder that that's not necessarily a given for everybody. So
Wow. The
Napa Food Bank does an amazing thing for our community, and we wanted to include it as part of the philanthropy aspect of the TP Reserve brand.
That's great. All right, we'll take a break here. Stay on the phone, and we'll come back. And you mentioned a couple of your brands already, Annaire and Reverie. So we'll talk about those and how you got to where you are today when On the Wine Road continues. On the Wine Road continues here on KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis, and I'm talking with winemaker Grant Long Jr., who created a whimsical brand called TP Reserve Wine, which is bottled as a Napa Valley Chardonnay and Red Blend and El Dorado Foothills Grenache. Find the wines at tpreservewine.com. He's also the winemaker for Annaire. That's one word, Annaire, and Reverie 2. We'll get into those a little later. In reaching back to his past, I had to ask a question about something I read. How did he come to make a barrel of wine as a teenager?
You know, there's a lot of dominoes that had to get into place for where we are today. And one of my best friend's fathers was a home winemaker. And though my dad had a wine cellar growing up, wine might as well have been a foreign import in the bigger picture of my life. And to see my friend's father making wine in the garage, just it opened up my eyes to something that I just really felt I never would be able to accomplish on my own. And I can still remember the time I told my parents that I wanted to make wine in the garage, and my dad lit up like a light bulb. Mom shook her head. And it was this back and forth of whether or not this was a good idea or a bad idea. Recently over Mother's Day, my mom laughed and said, you know, actually wasn't it? It turned out it was pretty good, didn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
And yes, you know, 20 years later, big
right.
difference.
Yeah. So take us along that path that delivered you to where you are today.
You know, after that, you know, college was a short stint. Never actually made it through more than a couple years, and ended up back here in the Valley, both working for different wineries and working under different mentors. And each one of them along the way offered knowledge and expertise. And it really wasn't until I met Norm Kicken up at Reverie Winery on Diamond Mountain, the original owner and winemaker up there, that some things changed for me and the doors opened to the business side of winemaking, which was kind of my passion from the very beginning. And that was where a lot of opportunities were given to me. Norm's tutelage in that aspect. He was a Fortune 1000 CFO from New York and really understood the financial side of things, and encouraged me to do something on my own. You would imagine most employers would not have had that stance, but he was a great guy. He is a great guy.
I like Grant's business model of making small production handcrafted wine with the intention of hearkening back to early winemaking in Napa Valley.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember as a kid, my father getting, you know, 80% of the gratification out of a bottle of wine was the story of where he was and who he met and where the wine came from and the story of the vineyard, all before a glass was even poured. Mm-hmm. And that story, you know, I don't want to say has been a little bit lost through the years as Napa has become more of a name. But those that make the pilgrimage to Napa and actually visit Napa Valley and meet the people behind these wines will always be able to take something home with them and be able to relive every time they pull a cork. And so that was kind of the purpose behind Ann Air and Reverie always being something that you had to make the pilgrimage to Napa, just like it was back in the 70s and 80s.
And since we're on the topic right now, which is kind of similar to how you named your wine, tell us what Ann Air, what that means.
Well, Ann Air is Gaelic or Irish in that sense for one man or individual. And it really started off as the title of the business. I mean, I was the owner, winemaker, CFO, CEO, toilet cleaner, whatever it took at that time. And it was actually my mom that helped me with actually naming the brand itself. The crest on the bottle is my grandfather's crest on my mother's side, the Hannigan clan.
Nice.
So it was also an ode to some family, some history. Even though I'm first generation owner and winemaker, it's a constant reminder that our grandparents worked so much harder than we did. We are so lazy compared to what they had to do.
No kidding.
So yeah.
Well, you haven't expanded much beyond being one man because your crew is fairly small, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we have some of the most talented people that have been part of what brought Ann Air from a one-man show into a very, very grassroots local business in all aspects. I mean, both wineries collectively, we've been able to keep everybody employed, keep everybody, you know, being able to stay working during this time. And that was one of the major drives for the TP brand. I mean, it is a big change from what I'm used to, but also what our team is used to. But they were all on board recognizing that, you know, we had to be able to be glass half full and step outside of our comfort zone.
Yeah, you operate in a means that my listeners have heard me talk about numerous times, and that's in a sustainable manner, which also includes how you treat your employees. So good for you for hanging on to your employees during this challenging time.
This valley is an amazing place, but for a lot of people, it's more of a job versus a career. And I told every single one of my amazing staff that I work with when they came on, like, if you treat this as a career, I will treat your salary and your employment as a career as well. And so we've always pushed very hard for benefits for everybody on the team. We've pushed to allow every single team member to make their own wine. You know, they all get to be able to create and go through the process of what it is like to have something that you created brought to fruition, meanwhile also being part of such an amazing team as well.
The kind of guy any of us would like to work for. He's Grant Long Jr. We'll find out more about his allocation wines, Ann Air and Reverie, when we get back on the Wine Road. This is On the Wine Road. Yet today, I'm on the wine phone with Grant Long Jr. of Napa Valley. Now, TP Reserve Wines is atypical of your Ann Air wines and Reverie too. Tell us about those classic Napa Cabernets and blends that you make.
Well, Ann Air, you know, came to fruition as a passion project turned career, turned family business, and it's been a roller coaster. My wife referred to me as her Yahoo husband, entrepreneur, and it's a it was really a factor of right place, right time, with certain opportunities that were thrown our way that we just didn't squander. And as ANAIR kind of came to fruition and the different personalities of it came about, we turned to the mountains as a unique, you know, style of wines. And so all the ANAIR wines are focused around the mountain, AVAs of Napa Valley, Howell Mountain, Atlas Peak, Spring Mountain, Diamond, and Mount Veeder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the cornerstone of what we do there. And we have an amazingly loyal following of club members that support us through our allocation list. When Norm retired from Reverie and the opportunity was given for me to buy the business from him, Reverie took on a completely different personality from ANAIR, as Norm had built a business around these single varietals, single AVA driven wines. And so we wanted to carry that torch forward in style, but with kind of a different flair. So stepping outside of the Napa Valley, we turned to the foothills for our Tempranillo and our Barbera, varietals that if you'd asked someone 10 years ago about, many people wouldn't even know what they are. Now they're becoming household names.
Yeah, love those.
Thank you, millennials, for that.
Yeah, you mentioned allocation list for ANAIR and I guess Reverie too. But can the public come up and do an appointment tasting when the time is right?
Yeah, I mean, once things open back up again, ANAIR and Reverie have always been by appointment only. You know, that's just where we don't have a lot of marketing behind those brands.
Mm-hmm.
It really is 100% word of mouth. As I said, going back to what it would have been like to come to Napa Valley in the 70s, 80s, you didn't exactly have a TripAdvisor
right.
option. So you ended up driving down dirt roads that a friend told you about, you know, make the left next to the big oak, and when you see the haystack, you know, you'll know you're there. That's kind of exactly what ANAIR and Reverie are. So they would just be a appointment only.
Well, you know, judging by the photos on your website, the tasting room for ANAIR is a beautiful open-air mountain cabin. It looks very comfortable and relaxing and has an excellent view, and it is reaching out to me. I can't wait to come up and see it.
Well, the original tasting rooms of Napa Valley were living rooms, and that's kind of again, going back to the cornerstone of what we wanted to have for an environment.
Well, it seems like you've had a lot of, whether you call it luck or serendipity, and you've taken advantage of everyone that has come your way. So congratulations on getting to this point.
Trying every day.
Thanks for joining me, Grant. Continued success.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Yet another example of a thoughtful, genuine winemaker whom I so often come across. Find his other brands at anairwines.com. That's ANAIR wines.com, reveriewine.com, and don't forget tpreservewine.com. I am out of time. Find my past interviews at onthewineroad.com, and I'll talk to you next Saturday here on The Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis.